Hello everyone and welcome to TechZone, powered by Axedia, a professional IT services company providing technology consulting and software development for businesses around the world. TechZone aims to shed light on how technology products are developed through the experience of software engineers, product people, UI/UX designers, and other experts. Each episode covers a specific software development topic, ranging from engineering, product, process, quality assurance, or a management viewpoint. Welcome to the TechZone.
Hi, and welcome to everybody listening to our TechZone podcast. My name is Alex Sudarov. I'm Senior Engineering Manager here in Taxidia. And with me, I have my friend Martin Stoyanov, Team Leader, Big Data and Advanced Analytics in Evident Bulgaria. Today, we're going to talk about AI, and more importantly, AI from the perspective of business people, business owners, people who need to decide, is LM something that they want to implement in their solutions, and if LLMs are something that they want to adapt to their processes and working flows. So Martin, welcome.
Thank you for having me here, Alex. It's a pleasure, and I'm looking forward to this very interesting discussion. I hope that everyone who listens to this podcast truly enjoys it and finds something useful in every aspect, at least even if it's a small one or a big detail that he's happy with.
Without further ado, I think we can dive deep and start with a little bit of an overview about LLMs. What happened with LLMs? Why they are so important and popular nowadays? Is this something new that happened in software industry, or is this something that's been around for a while?
Considering the fact that AI as one big area has been around for more or less the past 70 years or even more, LLMs are probably the manifestation that has naturally occurred in the past literally 2 or 3 years that is driving people into the AI industry and is driving the interest of those people and the business into it. What happened is that suddenly machine learning became less sexy, but more interesting when people understood that they could talk to a bot. And this bot is not simply someone who is something that is trained on a very limited set of what-if situations, but is actually capable of, air quotes, generating its own thoughts and its own, again, air quotes, opinions. OpenAI, I dare say, single-handedly revolutionized everything in the past 2.5 years. Before that, Google and their DeepMind initiative really tried to stir up something. They aimed at producing a tangible AI model, but people really didn't grasp the idea of, this machine here is really good at chess. Wow. It's not something that you present to your CIO. And it's not something that you present to your business partners. Despite Google attempting to revolutionize items, the whole world actually of AI, since 2013, 2015, the first versions of the BERT model, I think they're dating something like 2015 or 16. I don't know whether you remember those. Truly, OpenAI managed to get the ball rolling, both in terms of corporate and in terms of individuals' engagement in AI.
Yeah, most definitely. And even I remember something that I've read, that actually the whole concept of LLMs actually started in the 1930s. Of course, really crude, really different than the, today's versions, but the whole idea, the whole concept was created then. 2013, I guess, was a little, again, a pivotal point where Word 2 vector databases became popular and became used. So they put the ground foundation of the LLMs and pretty much everything that is built on top of that. You mentioned OpenAI. I think there are two major events that happened in the whole, let's say, LLM world or Gen AI world. The first one, as you mentioned, OpenAI released their ChatGPT version somewhere in the end of 2022. And they changed the way we, as you mentioned, we perceive chatbots, chats, and the whole thing of asking questions to chatbots. And then the second thing, can you guess what was the second thing that I think it's really pivotal for the LLM boom, let's say?
I'm going to imagine that this is the introduction of open source models, namely getting large companies like Meta into the competition. And I would assume that you mean either Llama or Falcon.
You're absolutely correct, but not exactly the involving the other corporates to this, rather than leaking Llama 2. Because I think this was really pivotal, because everybody who had some knowledge could run Llama 2 on their personal computer. And you can have the whole power of LLMs harnessed available on a keystroke on your computer.
And this is a great moment to give a shout out to a very dedicated Bulgarian.
Exactly. This is something that happened just because one really great person, really great professional, and of course technical expert, Georgi Gerganov, created this possible and created the whole thing possible to host Llama 2 on your computer. So shout out.
Llama CPP, what we're talking about with DAX right now, is actually a very pivotal point when it comes to having your own personal generative AI assistant. Now, what Georgi Gerganov did with his library and the I wouldn't say groundbreaking, but definitely something that shook the foundations of a person's ability to run an AI on his own machine. And trust me, the first time I ran it on my laptop, I was amazed. Mm-hmm. Literally.
Yeah.
Literally amazed. And not only that, he allowed a person to run a test on his own machine, you know, but he opened the door to the introduction of additional options for a company to utilize Gen AI. Now that we have more sophisticated inference methods and libraries, whole frameworks even, that are growing, I would say, exponentially.
Yeah, most definitely. This is the word that we can use easily here.
Yeah, we are liberated. I believe this is what we go into the field of democratizing AI with this.
Another topic that I want to discuss with you is, do you think that LLMs currently are the next groundbreaking paradigm that's related to software development? Is it going to stay? Is it going to change the way we are looking into software solutions, how we implement software solutions? Or this is just something that's currently really hot, but it's going to be not forgotten, but faded away after X amount of months or years? For example, blockchain. I'm not saying here blockchain is obsolete in no chance, but the hype that was 7 years ago, 6 years ago, is nowhere to be seen at the moment.
You're absolutely right. Indeed, several years ago, everyone was crazy about public ledgers, about having your own blockchain technology, about providing private and public contracts. And indeed, this was a hot topic. But the fact of the matter is that it was somehow out of reach of the common person. You know, you go into the street and you ask someone, okay, do you know that there is on your carton of milk, there is this barcode and you can actually scan it and you can see that this milk was from a cow in that city or whatever, and it was taken.
Purple cow in Netherlands or Netherlands.
Exactly. And it was somehow out of reach of the common person. But here, if I go out right now on the street and I ask 10 people ranging from 10-year-olds to 90-year-olds, I'm going to assume that at least seven of them are going to say, yeah, I know what Gen AI is. Well, not Gen AI, but
ChatGPT.
ChatGPT is. Yeah, let's, you know, it's almost a colloquial name right now.
Exactly.
This is likely not going to be a fad. Already there are significant indications, unfortunately I don't remember statistics on this one, but, and I don't want to misquote anything, that the amount of AI-generated content on the internet right now is growing significantly by the minute.
To the point where it's going to be more generated content in near future than it was written throughout the whole human history.
Most likely, yes. We're going to get to that point, definitely. Plus, we are seeing Gen AI being implemented in places where you are, well, where you didn't know it would be implemented. It has medical implementations right now. Today, I read an article actually on this topic. A certain AI was trained on a numerous amount of medical examination pictures that were taken for different types of skin conditions. And the purpose is to assist, not take over the job of a doctor, of course, but assist a doctor in better diagnosing skin conditions that are ranging from a simple rash to serious melanomas. AI is penetrating on a multi-level, the whole industry of IT, pretty much any industry, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's
actually
penetrating, if we can use the word. I think so it's being applicable to each and every aspect of our lives. And probably here we need to mention huge companies like the technical hegemons and leaders of technical development for the past, I don't know how many years, are taking their shot at Gen AI, LLMs, and they're creating their own LLMs, and I even don't want to assume what they're creating behind closed doors. Plus, as we have talked before, that on some level, governments are being involved as well.
Actually, when we talk about the creation of a brand new large language model, then we definitely need to mention the fact that training a model from the ground up is something that is either within the power of a significantly well-prepared corporation,
and well-funded operation,
and well-funded, or within the capabilities of a nation. And here I need to point out and remind everyone that before Llama 2 actually came into existence, the top model was Falcon. And Falcon was actually trained by the University of the United Arab Emirates. So it was something that had a profound effect because this was a technological, I would call it a breakthrough, but still not, you know, they didn't go to the moon. But still a technological breakthrough that comes from a section of the world that is usually not associated with this. And it was impressive and definitely put them on the map in terms of it was a model. Even I considered it for some of my proof of concepts. It was a model that truly found applications. I'm going to assume that there are some companies right now are probably running items on Falcon 7B, Falcon 7B Chat, or Falcon Instruct, which was an excellent model when it came to embeddings.
Even though this happened just a few years ago, I think the progress of improving, the progress of learning, the progress of things getting better and better, as we have used a couple of minutes ago, the word exponential, I think something that was really groundbreaking 2 years ago, year and a half ago, now it's not even relevant to the conversation.
I completely agree. I'm going to go even, I'm going to say even something bolder. Something that I did a week ago may not be relevant today.
Probably we need to tell everybody that who are listening that today, even though we are going to be talking about the LLMs from a business perspective, we do have a plan to make those series a longer sprint. And we're going to involve another topics like technical aspects, some other interesting aspects of LLMs that are not being discussed so far. So stay tuned so you can hear us. So now I want to mention something that probably as a business owner, everybody has to consider. Depending on what large language model you want to use, what are the types of different language models, what are their benefits, and of course their drawbacks, because I don't think there is one solution fits them all. If you want, I can start with listing some of the things. Probably you can jump in anytime. The major players in the current industry, and those are not limited to, but they're pretty much possessing the major market cap currently being used are ChatGPT powered by OpenAI, Llama 2, and its variances, of course, Llama Code, Llama Chat, GPT 3, 4, maybe not so 3, but 3.5 Turbo or something. And they are the other side. Something like small, large language models, Distilled Berta, Orca 2, T5, and all those smaller models. What do you think is the best solution, or probably should say, what is the best use cases for those and when they can be used?
What is the best car in the world? It depends, right? If you are going on Monza in Italy, you definitely need something that is really good in the Benz, capable of getting from 0 to 100 in less than 3-4 seconds.
Yeah.
If you are somewhere in the back roads of rural Bulgaria, you're going to need a 4x4 truck. These are all excellent models and they're all terrible. The point is that if you need to pick one, you're definitely going to have to come up with your use case. And your use case is different from my use case, and it's different from anyone else's in the world, likely. There might be some subtle differences, but definitely what you need to pick depends on how and what you're willing to achieve. And not to forget how much you're going to pay for it and how much you're okay with paying for it.
Yeah, the pricing is interesting aspect, and we're going to come back to this a little bit later. But let's start to talk about first the big models, the ones with the billiards of tokens being used to train and use GPT-4. Llama 2, even the one that are, of course, provided with OpenAI. Why can we use those for all purposes? What are the drawbacks and why sometimes we decide to use smaller LLMs?
Let's start first with OpenAI. Let's say that you have a use case where you want to alleviate the effort and the pressure that you have on your support staff. Mm-hmm. And you are going for the low-hanging fruit. Retrieval augmented generation of your support documents utilizing OpenAI GPT-4 11.0.6 Turbo.
The current version.
Yeah. Basically, you're going for the big guns, right? What you're going to get out of this? You're going to get a vendor that is taking care of the inference for you.
Mm-hmm.
You are going to get a very capable model that is capable of handling pretty much any task when it comes to retrieval augmented generation of, I'm going to use air quotes here, a simplified database of documentation.
Mm-hmm.
But you're also going to get a vendor. And I know that I'm repeating myself because when you are using someone else's model, you're taking the burden of all the different negatives that comes with this. So if you want to go for it right now, you want a POC or you want to move to production as fast as possible, then you likely go with some of the models that are already available and you can use as a vendor. You know, you can use someone as your vendor. And this is probably the 60-70% of the cases, in my opinion, from what I see so far. This is not the best case for everyone, right? Let's say that you have a small shop. You're not going to spend a huge amount of money on a model that is hosted by a vendor. And you don't want to train, fine-tune, do some of these more complex tasks. You want to, let's say, out-of-the-box substitute those three people that you have taking orders, sending emails. Why not go for a small model and use it out-of-the-box, hosted on one of the readily available websites that provide serverless solutions for hosting large language models? This is a totally different paradigm of going for a generative AI solution. Your best case is derived based on what you are willing to spend, how much control you're going to give up, whether you have some special needs. For example, let's say you're into biomechanics. You are doing some research and you want to train a model on this. Fine-tune, I mean. But still, train is also a possible case. Your case is entirely, your model is dependent on your case. It's a very interesting thing that recently came up is a framework that allows for large language models to be hosted on mobile devices.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And it's truly amazing. You know, you can infuse an evergreen knowledge by fine-tuning a model, setting it up on the specific business person's device. Still, it requires some power. I mean, you definitely can't go lower than iPhone 14. You know, it's a significant amount of memory, but still, this is something that is going to grow with each year. The compute power is going to grow.
Mm-hmm.
And you can have a model on this person's phone. What is he or she going to use it for? Well, it depends. It depends on your use case, but the possibilities are limitless. If you're going to go for retrieval augmented generation, I'm going back to this use case, and you have a massive amount of documents, you may go for the OpenAI solution, with GPT-4, you know, take out the big guns. But because of the fact that you are having a huge database of documents, you may choose not to utilize OpenAI for the embedding of those documents into your vector database. You may go for the smaller models. You may go for the Stillbert, which is pretty decent when it comes to embeddings. You may go for some of the many models that are currently available on Hugging Face.
I was more going with this question about what are the main differences, and you mentioned that it's really depending on the budget that you have, the functionality that you want to cover, the use cases that you have, because even that we are talking about large language models as a whole, they are not exactly the same. Different models have different architectures internally. And some of the models are useful for, let's say, text summarization. Others are great for translation of different languages or something like that. So depending on your use case, depending on your budget, depending on the freedoms that you want to give to the provider, you can use different models. And sometimes, not always, big is not always the best. For some reasons or some needs, a smaller LLM can be a better solution for numerous reasons.
Right now, the fad, you know, the current trend is generative pre-trained transformers. But things are going to change. And I'm not saying this because I'm a researcher at MIT. But sooner or later, someone builds a better mousetrap, right? The most recent example of that is Mamba. It's a brand new large language model that is utilizing a different architecture. It's relying on a different architecture from the currently popular GPT. When it comes to model size, you have multiple factors here. You have the number of parameters. Usually, the larger, the better, but not always. Let's say, again, going back to this use case where you have a limited budget, a small scope, what you need to do is keep within those parameters, right? I mean, you're a business. You have to keep within those parameters. And a large language model that is 70 or 135 billion, billion tokens, it's something that will require a significant amount of compute power. And no matter how optimized Mr. Geram's algorithms with Llama CPP are, it's not going to be enough, you know, to manage to fit an elephant inside a purse.
Not only computer power, but also data. Based on, it was called the Chinchilla paper that was released some time ago. The optimal way to fine-tune a model with, let's say a million tokens, because it's easy to do the math, is somewhere between, in a ratio between 1 and 1.5, which means that if I want to train efficiently a model that's a million tokens, I'm going to need a training data that is going to be about a million to 1.5 million tokens, which is really hard to obtain. Data is going to be not only computer power, but data as well is going to be really hard to find.
And we come to cannibalism. AI-generated content being fed into a model to train it.
This is something that is currently happening, and how do you control it? But actually, this is something that we can start talking a little bit later. We're moving naturally to the point where we're going to talk about data. Let's talk about, as a business owner, what happens with my data? Let's say I want to see if LLMs are mining. I want to create a POC. I want to put my data in, see what are the outcomes, decide the business value of this solution, and try to see how this is going to fit into my software chain of, let's say, decisions or whatever. What happened with the data that I input into the models to be trained, pre-trained, fine-tuned, and so on?
Here again, we come to hosting it yourself versus trusting a vendor. When it comes to a vendor, you're definitely giving up control. You are giving up, at least to some degree, the information, because despite the vendor's guarantees, you still need to trust that vendor, whether it is through NDAs, additional software agreements, an army of lawyers, whatever it may be. You are still going to send some of your information somewhere, and you're going to give neural network the access that you give your most trusted employees. to that information.
Yeah, actually, data is one of the most valuable assets a company can have. It can contain everything from financial data to knowledge to internal processes to trading secrets, pretty much everything that the company values as one of the most important assets that it has.
Exactly. Exactly. And when you come, however, to the other option, let's say you are a company that is dealing with pharmaceuticals, let's say pharmaceuticals, and you are not really happy with sharing 5, 10 or 15 years of research mm-hmm. with anyone. And you can imagine the level of paranoia is somewhat justified in such a case.
Most definitely justified.
And what are you going to do? You're going to self-host. Mm-hmm. You're going to self-host and you are going to have to hire the experts that are going to help you with this self-hosting. You are going to have everything within your own cloud, private cloud, public cloud, let's say. Your infrastructure is going to be contained there.
So we can try to summarize that you can have your data fed to the model, but it really depends on what do you want to achieve and what is level of your level of comfort providing this data. If it's self-hosted, you control everything. But in order to do this properly, you need to have, let's say, really smart people, technically savvy to do this. If you want just to make a quick POC, you can feed it to provider like OpenAI or something else. But in this case, you're agreeing to their, let's say, global policies for data privacy, data usage, and so on and so on. As a matter of fact, I don't know if you've read it or if you had a chance to take a look at the policies for data usage and storage in OpenAI. They have different concepts if you are a business user or if you are a single user, like pretty much every one of us that are having OpenAI subscription, not on business level, of course. For example, for single users, their policy is that everything that you feed to the model from data, inference questions, everything that you use for testing, fine-tuning, pretty much everything is open for reusage from their side, usage for retraining the models, and pretty much they can do whatever they want to do. You can turn this off. Though there is a policy that the data will be stored for 30 days, but they are not going to use it, or so they say. And if you want not to track, because you have the option not to track your interaction with the model, it's going to be hidden. So, for example, your chat history is going to be hidden. You're not going to be able to see it. But again, they're going to store it. And the reasoning behind this, their statement was that first, they need to make sure that what you're doing is allowed in terms of their policies for what's okay and what's not okay to use the LLM for pure security reasons. But if you are a business user, then they're storing the data for 30 days, but they are not using it for retraining the models that are currently in development and so on and so on. So this is the OpenAI policy. It's kind of okay, but still there are some vague points that are not exactly clarified.
This actually brings me to something related to generative AI for a specific purpose, namely GitHub Copilot. Have you checked actually the GitHub Copilot usage policies? Because they significantly differ when you are an enterprise user and when you are a single user. Mm-hmm. You have again the option to opt out. Here's the interesting thing. GitHub still says that if you are, actually, GitHub equals Microsoft. Mm-hmm. So they still say that if you are going to utilize Copilot and let's say use the inline chat mm-hmm. or you're going to paste a piece of code, this code is still going to be parsed by the model. I mean, it still has to parse it in order to give you an answer. It's not correct. Going to come up with it out.
But is it going to remember it?
And this is the interesting part. I think it's rather vague when it comes to this, because for the enterprise account, it clearly states that it is not going to. Mm-hmm. For the single user account, however, it is rather vague. An interesting dilemma when it comes to Gen AI. How much do you share? What do you share? Another experiment that was conducted specifically with ChatGPT was a person deliberately gave a sample sentence. I cannot remember exactly what it was. Let's say, I have 7 brothers and 7 sisters. And he tried with numerous prompts to make the model forget this. And it didn't. It tried to, well, it hallucinated, first mm-hmm. of all, because the person tried several prompts, you know, delete this information, this is not right, you shouldn't be remembering this.
I don't remember any information about 7 sisters and 7 brothers.
Precisely. And it's a funny thing. It's a funny thing that you are giving away some of your information and you are basically relying on a user agreement. Of course, right now, even right now, let's say I upload a personal video of my family to Azure Storage. Mm-hmm. Microsoft does have mechanisms. It doesn't disclose exactly what, but it has mechanisms through which it parses those items that you have in your storage account in order to make sure that it is not something that is against its usage policy. Mm-hmm. It's an automated system. Again, those models that we are discussing right now, they're not something that is being used by a person. But at some point, your information is going to be possibly seen by someone if you go into the direction of reinforced human learning.
We're going to talk about reinforced human learning in a little bit when we talk about security. But probably the conclusion or the lesson that we can take from this is if you are opting for a service provider, you're relying on their user policies, as you mentioned. And if you're using their, let's say, business accounts, it's relatively straightforward stated what is going to happen with the data, as probably most of us are relying on their own accounts. Everything that we share can, might, and will be used for future trainings and usage from the model and the company that provides it. Is there a difference with self-hosted models?
In my opinion, self-hosted models are the best option for any security conscious company mm-hmm. or any company that may not be security conscious, but it still has a specific knowledge that doesn't want to be shared with absolutely anyone who is outside of its area of influence, I would call it. Don't mean to sound like a Bond villain, mm-hmm. but being private and keeping items to yourself is not a bad thing. Self-hosted models are entirely within your domain of influence. You do what you want. You can shut it down.
You can delete it.
Yeah, you can delete it. You can fine-tune it, utilize whatever level of access you want. Mm-hmm. And you are certain that your security skills are what governs how this model is going to divulge information to anyone. Let's not forget cases where you're relying on a vendor of generative AI services that is going to give you certain assurances. Mm-hmm. But as history teaches us, several months ago, Samsung had a major data leak because they utilized OpenAI's ChatGPT for a meeting that was internal. Mm-hmm. And some of the data leaked into other people's conversations. And this was something that was, well, obviously Samsung is still in business, but it's not something that you'd expect from your AI assistant, right? Self-hosting is great, but then you have to rely on a team of experts.
Yeah, exactly.
You need to add some additional overhead to this. And this overhead is important, but it will give you the peace of mind to sleep at night. But still, you need experts in security, infrastructure, AI, of course. DevOps, all
those stuff. Yeah, most definitely. All stuff. Actually, I had a conversation with a friend of mine. He mentioned that, I don't remember if it was in their company or it is something that he heard, but they have restricted the access to ChatGPT OpenAI, provided by OpenAI, whereas they have run their self-hosted GPT models. and they are open to the whole company. They have a farm, actually not a single instance, but they have a farm. Pretty much everybody can harness the power of communicating, let's say communicating with a GPT model, but these models are hosted in secured area with complete control of the company, of the data, the inference, and pretty much everything that's happening with those models. And I'm not talking about any solutions. They're just providing their employees with the option to use ChatGPT, but throughout a proxy version of the GPT model that's being hosted on their environments. So there are ways, just we need to remember that whatever we do, there are consequences, and it's not a great idea if we're using single user accounts to expose sensitive data. Is it going to be a code or documents or anything that can be potentially harmful to a company, to organization? We need to be really strict about it. And we're going to talk about security in a little bit. So let's pause this topic. Another interesting thing is, what will happen if you want to delete the data? If it's a self-hosted or if it's from an organization, what are the guarantees that's happening? All those stuff. Do you have any thoughts on this matter?
OpenAI they promised that they're not going to keep your data past a certain point. They may train your model, their model, but they will not keep the data.
Your version of their model hosted by them.
Yeah, so it's a very fine line when I don't know where it is actually being drawn up. Right now, the low-hanging fruit for most use cases, these are the retrieval augmented generations. Mm-hmm. And so long as you keep your vector database close to your chest, as if you're playing poker, and you trust your vendor, whether it is Google, OpenAI, Quote, Cohere, so long as you keep your vector databases close to your chest, yeah, you're going to be fine. Now, there is something that probably we can mention right now about the model weights.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
okay.
What are model weights? Well, these are the different interactions between the texts that you have used to train your model, right?
Yeah, probably we can simplify it even further. We can say that LLMs, what they do is pretty much they're predicting the next part of a word, sentence, or whatever.
Never gonna give you up.
Exactly. And those weight coefficients and those weight models are exactly the way the LLM predicts the next token. Your point probably is that if you keep the weight models a secret, no matter what they get afterwards, it's not going to be that much of a word without the weight coefficients.
Well, actually, I want to stress on the fact that if you are an organization that mm-hmm. has spent the time mm-hmm. and significant amount of money to train your own model, not just fine-tune it, but mm-hmm. train your own model, and you are producing something that is of high value to you, it's likely of high value to someone else somewhere, somehow. The model weights are likely the new gold. So if you have a very advanced model that has cost $100 or $200 or several million to train.
Well, actually, it's in millions. I don't even think it's in hundreds.
There are some improvements in that area, actually. You know, if you'd like to train a small model. But so let's say that you spent... Let's say that you spent $10 million on it, and you have the model weights. I would put those somewhere where we have guard dogs, armed guards, Mission Impossible style security systems, everything that Scrooge McDuck would use to safeguard his fortune.
Everything that somebody can get in terms of security outage is a no-no and a huge risk. Doesn't matter if it's just the weights, the tokens, the words, the letters, the documents, whatever. If somebody can get any of those, you have some major issues. And we're going to talk about security in a minute. Final questions. Do you know, for example, the policy of OpenAI to delete items? Because I've read it. And actually, it's a matter of fact, you cannot delete a model that you have trained, pre-trained from the UI. There is not a button. You can do it, but throughout the app.
Well, Alex, I believe that they're trying to ensure that only people who air quotes, know what they're doing, are going to do it. Because imagine the case, we have a shared account in a small company. I have trained a model and you are, well, not the intern, but let's say that you are the new guy. And by some mistake, or
mistakes happen.
Yeah, through some machinations of fate. Yeah. You are pressing on that button that says delete.
But after that, there is a prompt say, are you sure you want to delete? And hypothetically, you're going to press yes there as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not saying that it haven't happened before in human history, but
still, even those type of safeguards are sometimes overlooked, unfortunately. I would support, you know, keeping some items to the API or to a dedicated command line. Microsoft, for example, in Azure, when you are going to delete a resource, what do? You have to type the name of the resource.
Yeah.
So it's basically a two-step verification where they make sure, are you really sure about that? Because you're going to lose a piece of infrastructure, code, or whatever that you probably spent some time and money on. I'm a proponent and support these types of safeguards. Pinecone has a similar functionality, by the way.
99% of the times, you're absolutely right. There needs to be some kind of a fail-safe that you don't do stupid stuff. But let's assume that I'm a business owner who just decided to try if teaching those LLMs are going to help me with my barbershop, for example. I have read how to feed my data, but I have zero understanding about coding, what is an API, how to use it, what to do, and so on and so on. So I've tested it, said it's not exactly for me. I don't have the money, for example. And you want to delete your trace. And you cannot do it without a developer or somebody with at least an understanding of APIs.
I have a solution for you. You can ask ChatGPT. It can write the code for you.
Yeah, you can do it, of course, with this, but still it's a hassle. So we have mentioned on several occasions the security part. Let's talk about security. What are the main, let's say, security concerns that somebody must have when we're dealing with LLMs, including LLMs into our software solutions, and of course deciding to trust the LLM, either if it's self-hosted from us or if it's provided to some kind of an organization, as you mentioned, OpenAI, Hugging Face, whatever. What are the main things that you can think about it?
At the end of the day, it comes to data and it comes to know-how. Mm-hmm. Let's start first with the data. If you are providing the model with data, we already discussed that you need to, you know, keep your vector database close to your chest. You need to make sure that it is secure. You are exposing a large amount of proprietary information to a certain audience. But the better you are at securing data when it comes to the traditional means of having your data secure, you're most likely going to apply those same practices to large language models. You're going to segregate access to people who have access, who need access to this AI assistant that you have. You're going to place safeguards. For example, an interesting idea would be to have one of those frameworks like Creo AI or like Autogen that can have several agents discussing a topic. You can have safeguards there that prevent certain information from being outputted. Let's say you have a network of agents. The first agent provides the information. The second one is the guard dog, checks it. Then you have another one that verifies it. And then you have the output finally going to the user. So you're going to have this in terms of safeguarding your data. Now, when it comes to know-how, there is a very interesting website that recently appeared on the internet. It's called Beat the Wizard. Fairly certain that you're familiar with it.
Actually, when we met, I don't know, a month ago or something, you mentioned it to me. It was super entertaining to try it myself, and I beat it on the very next evening.
For all the listeners here, what this website is, it is actually a simple prompt challenge. What you are tasked with is to make sure that you can get the password that the wizard is safeguarding.
The wizard, in this case, an LLM that is trained to protect it. And you have several, of course, levels of difficulty. And level 8, which at least when I played it, it was the highest level.
Yeah.
And it was really entertaining for me to try to get the password. And yeah, it was a great, let's say, prompt engineering exercise that we'll gladly suggest to anybody that is listening. Probably they can find it online. But it's a great one, most definitely. I was going to tell you, I don't know if you've read it, but there was something that was called OWASP Top 10 for LLMs. It's a paper of security details when we're talking about LLMs. I would highly suggest to anybody to read it. It's really detailed one. And I have extrapolated several of the main things that are common issues that can occur. Everything that we have already mentioned from prompt engineering. But there is something else. Inference, validation, and sanitization. This is something that we have learned from day one. Well, not day one, but day two, when we started coding. Every time when you have an input from a user, you need to validate this input. This pretty much applies to LLM in highest form. Because if the model is not trained, if there are not other, let's say, security protocols, the LLM can actually expose a lot of information about the infrastructure that is being run on, pretty much a lot of information that you don't want to get out.
Not only that, but going back to the topic of know-how, if you are very keen on providing prompt engineering, safeguarding your prompts, then you need to take special steps to make sure that your model doesn't spill out the beans and tell exactly what you have been tasking it to do. This Be the Wizard is an excellent exercise in this. Right now, you know that OpenAI has this GPT store, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this GPT store is currently a bunch of OpenAI wrappers plus function calling. It's an oversimplification, of course. Mm-hmm. It's an oversimplification. But if a person wants to see how a specific item in the GPT store has been constructed and the author of this specific item has not taken steps in order to protect his know-how, intellectual property is not the right word, but it's close enough to for the point of my argument. Pretty much anyone can clone another GPT from the GPT store with several clever prompts asking the model to spill out and say exactly on what it has been trained on, mm-hmm. what data sets it has been trained on, in case those data sets are not obfuscated in some way, like PDF1, PDF2, mm-hmm. PDFN. And I doubt that everyone takes the time mm-hmm. and steps to do so. They'll likely also include the specific names of the files. Yeah. So taking those steps to secure your model is something that any GenAI engineer should be really concerned with.
And this is only one aspect. Another aspect, to be honest, is if we take a step back from the LLM itself, while we're developing solutions based on LLMs, we are including into our code base a lot of third-party libraries and frameworks that most of the cases are really useful. But sometimes there could be security threat there as well. If we don't trust the issuer or the creator of a specific framework and they have decided to include a little something, even though the framework is really helpful, it can do multiple things and it's not sure that everything is going to be into your own interests. So this is also an interesting aspect. Probably we can talk a little bit about the models itself, based on what data they are being trained, because for the moment, we're talking for the big and most famous models. But let's say you decide to take a model which is advertised to be really good at specific something that you want for your business case, but you don't know the training data of this model, and this model can be trained with really wrong data or intentionally swayed data in some direction. And imagine you are using something like this for kids to help them understand or help them read lullabies or bedtime stories or whatever. And it starts telling them stuff that they're not supposed to learn or something like that.
Well, actually, this already happened. But thank God it was a security exercise. Hugging Face, as you know, is one of the biggest... I'm going to say the biggest, actually, the biggest hub for open source models.
True.
And the team of security researchers made a very deliberate yet unnoticeable error, air quotes, in the name of a popular model, whether it was Falcon or Mistral or Llama 2. Mm-hmm. I don't remember exactly which one it was, but it was a very small but deliberate error in the name. For example, Cyrillic A or adding an I instead of L. And they uploaded a poisoned model because this is exactly a state that you're describing. It's called model poisoning. And this poisoned model had biases which were deliberately placed there. The model had been trained politically incorrect, not in terms of explicit content, but in terms of being biased towards one or another political opinion. So right now, OpenAI, for example, has a white paper in which it describes how it escapes biases, how it makes sure that the model is not politically biased,
swayed in any direction,
anti-Semitic, God forbid, or whatever. Mm-hmm. And the fact is that this model was poisoned specifically for that purpose. Mm-hmm. It had been downloaded several hundred times by the time it was taken down by the security researchers, and the people who downloaded it were notified. The point of the experiment was to make sure that, to prove actually, that it's extremely easy to manipulate...
Well, the unbiased opinion of the algorithm.
Yeah, to have a biased opinion and to upload something and it can go unnoticed. As for the libraries that we're currently using... Mm-hmm. Right now, those frameworks are, they have an established base, really well established.
Yeah. Most of them, that's also true, but sometimes you want to achieve a little something that's outside of the usual, let's say, heavy part of functionality of a framework. And you say, well, I can try to code it and I'll do it, but it will take me X amount of time. Or I can try to download a framework that can do it faster and I don't have to code it. And in your... let's say, urge to save time, probably you can introduce a security risk. So there are major concerns we're introducing third-party frameworks to our solutions, of course, and we have to be really, really careful what we are doing. I don't know if you know, but 2024, this year, it's going to be unprecedented, or I don't know if it's unprecedented, but it's going to be really busy in terms of elections worldwide. Such poisoned models are probably going to do a lot of damage to the unbiased opinion of the people and the things that is being generated and things that are released to mass public and so on and so on. So this is another huge concern. I don't know if it's exactly handled at the moment. I know we have both together been to an event where a group of people were talking about this and the steps they are trying to do in order to prevent this, but it's really a small team. In Bulgaria, it was about 50 people or something.
Yeah.
Actually, I think we have a colleague. One of our colleagues is part of this team. 50 people against the world in generating those politically swayed content. So it's really an even fight.
Let's, for a moment, you know, take a little bit of lighter tone, because let's imagine that we're not talking about malicious cases. Mm-hmm. Several months ago, OpenAI updated GPT 3.5.0.6.13 and they updated it somehow. What they updated, we don't know. Stay updated. Yeah. And I'm using GPT 3.5, this specific version, for a personal project of mine. And one day I'm using REST API for this, using Fast API in Python, and I'm sending my curl request
in English.
In English, and the model responds in Spanish. I check out my prompts. I see whether I have inadvertently added something that asks the model to, let's say, reply in Spanish, or if it detects a word in another language to reply in that particular language. No, it's perfectly fine. I do some minor code changes. I send my request again, and it answers in Spanish again. And it keeps talking in Spanish. I go to a dedicated testing ground that I have on this, and I start chatting, and the model keeps answering in Spanish. And there is nothing I can do about it. There is absolutely nothing. I'm helpless. I am literally helpless. Nothing can be done because of the fact that something happened on the vendor side. The other thing is that, again, going with OpenAI, and don't mean to be bashing them, but an example of inexperienced developers, what they would do. Pip install library name, right? Yeah. What is the proper way to do this? You have a requirements file, and in this requirements file, you have specific versions because your code base is targeted to work with specific versions. OpenAI did a major leap when they upgraded their library from 0.28 to 1.0. It was a major leap. And a bunch of software solutions stopped working because they changed the syntax of the code. Mm-hmm. So if we forget, for example, the cases where we have malicious actions, we are sometimes at the mercy of either our own faults or on the provider's fault. Same thing happens actually with LangChain because they upgraded to version 1.0 in the past few weeks, I guess. I don't remember. And right now, if you haven't updated your code base, you are getting a whole bunch of warnings because they have segregated the individual items from the single LangChain library to LangChain community and to LangChain core.
So all the things that we have discussed so far are great and interesting, and I'm sure that pretty much everybody can get a value out of it. But probably there is something that we haven't mentioned, and it's regulations. What are the current regulations that are affecting LLMs generally in EU, because we are there, and what can be done to improve this?
We are subject to the GDPR, and this omnipotent force is going to be extended sooner or later to every aspect of the generative AI solutions that we are currently working on and in the future we'll be working with. When it comes to the regulations, for example, remember how much time it took for BART, Google BART, to become available in the EU? It was something like 2 months because there were certain aspects of the conversations that the users had with BART that couldn't be tackled by the current setup of the chatbot that Google has. GDPR for sure is going to extend in our work with LLMs. And we as technical experts, as people who are working together with C-level management, we need to be aware of this in order to advise and to safeguard the proper implementations of the solutions that we have. So likely we are going to be forced, I'm using this word with some degree of hope that it's not going to be forcibly, but we will have to make sure that conversations that people have with AI assistants are properly encrypted, that certain items like PII, personal identifiable information, is obfuscated in case we, as let's say we have a model and we want to retrain it, and we certainly cannot have a person's name or age or personal details appear in a training data set. So this is going to come, and those who are not prepared are going to be hit hard. So it is wise to make sure that GDPR is kept in mind when implementing such a solution. Now, there is something brand new that is coming.
It's called the AI EU Act that is currently being suggested, implemented. No, it's not implemented.
I think it's not debated.
It's debated, yeah, it's the proper word. And according to it, different areas of implementations of large language models are being categorized in terms of severity. And one of the highest level is that even though that you want to make the most personal experience ever for a user when communicating or interacting with your application, you cannot categorize people based on features or based on behavior or based on something else. It was a little bit strangely explained, but the idea is that you cannot profile people. And even though you want to make it as personal as possible, you have to do it without profiling. And this is something that's being debated. I'm sure that at some point they're going to enforce it. It will affect a lot of aspects and a lot of industries that Gen AI and LLMs in general are being used, and they're going to be subjected to a lot of regulations and probably audits. I don't know.
It is something that is going to come sooner or later when it comes to generative AI. Now, we are in Europe. We must abide by European laws, and we will, of course. But the question is...
Is the world going to do this the same?
Imagine the case, as you mentioned.
Yeah.
It, of course, there are extreme ethical implications when it comes to, let's say, profiling a person's behavior. But the first thing that comes to my mind is... An AI assistant, which is utilizing AI-generated graphical avatar at the airport, who is assisting people who have lost their luggage. If this assistant can correctly assess that the person on the other side is anxious, scared, worried, then maybe the way that the assistant takes on the problem is going to be, let's say, a little bit gentler, a little bit softer than rather with someone who says, I lost my bag, where can I find it? It's something that is indeed going to be a limitation, but on the other hand, it will likely safeguard a lot of companies from trouble when it comes to incorrectly profiling a person.
It's going to have a lot of benefits, definitely. But probably it's going to set back progress a little bit, because when you regulate something, you don't have the freedom to move, evolve, or, you know, make the great progress leaps that currently those that are currently ahead of us are doing. And we were talking, and actually there was a great example that we have witnessed one conference about education, and in EU they're going to apply this to educational related content that is generated by LLMs and so on. And here the question is, are they going to do something like this in India, China, Japan, or somewhere in the Near East, where those things going to help immensely to those kids, whereas ours are being regulated in terms of functionality and things that you can do with it. So there are two different perspectives to this. Probably some kind of a regulation is great, but is regulation going to stop progress? I think nobody knows at the moment, but yeah.
We have to abide by the rules.
Yeah.
We'll certainly be seeing a new type of job position, actually.
Yeah, most definitely.
AI auditor? Large language model auditor? Regulator?
Compliance manager?
Yeah, compliance manager is actually that sounds pretty on point.
Yeah, most definitely. Yeah,
and it's right now, maybe not today, maybe not in a week, maybe not in 5 months, but next year?
It's happening, yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to bet that it will happen.
I think this was a great beginning for this series. I think we have covered a lot of ground regarding general LLM knowledge, data handling, data concerns, security risks, and pretty much all security aspects, not all, but the major ones that can and must be taken under consideration when we're deciding if you want to use, implement, or somehow incorporate LLM into our solutions. So I think it was a great start. Definitely, I would like to deep dive into a little bit more technical details. I'm sure that a lot of people are going to love this. So thank you, Martin, for joining.
Thank you for having me, Alex. I would love to talk code, tech details, and do a deep dive so that we can, you know, expand the knowledge of everyone who is listening and also continue this wonderful discussion that we're having.
Yeah, most definitely. Thanks everyone for tuning in. This is the end of our discussion for today, but soon we'll come back with even more great discussions on technical details and everything related to LLMs.
This is the end of the episode. If you enjoyed it, follow us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or any other audio platform. Subscribe to our YouTube channel via the link in the description of the episode so you can explore more and stay tuned for all the video content we produce. Thanks again and goodbye from us.